Welcome, everyone. This is the Accessible Technology Webinar Series. I'm Janet Peters. I'm a project coordinator for the Great Lakes ADA Center. The Accessible Technology Webinar Series is sponsored by the Great Lakes ADA Center and the Pacific ADA Center. Both are members of the ADA National Network. The ADA National Network is comprised of 10 regional centers funded by the National Institute on Disability and Rehabilitation Research. Our session today is going to start in just a minute, but I'd like to do a couple of housekeeping items before we start. This note that this session is being recorded and the archive will be available to you on the Accessible Technology webinar site where you registered. This session has real-time captioning available. The closed captioning symbol is on the icon menu toward the top on the right side, or you can select it from the key combination of Control F8. Note that the closed captioning window can be resized and adjusted to your specifications with background color and font size. The session today will take questions and interactions through the chat area. So your chat area is currently turned on, and you may chat questions and or responses to our speaker in the chat area. Please note that there will be time at the end for questions, so if your question doesn't get answered during the session, I'm monitoring the chat area and all questions will be answered at the end of the session as well. So I'd like to jump into the content. Our session today is on web accessibility analytics and open source tools for inspecting and auditing web resources for accessibility. We are very pleased to have a national expert speaker with us today, Dr. John Gunderson. Dr. John Gunderson has been the coordinator of the Information Technology Accessibility in the Division of Disability Resources and Educational Services at the University of Illinois. He leads the IT accessibility efforts on the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign campus. John is the chair of the Open Accessibility Alliance and the co-chair of the Open Ajax Accessibility Task Force and a member of the W3C Protocols and Formats Working Group on the Accessible Rich Internet Applications, ARIA, and the W3C Web Content Accessibility Techniques Task Force. John is the former chair of the W3C User Agent Accessibility Working Group. This group produced the W3C User Agent Accessibility Guidelines 1.0. John is nationally known and has given numerous presentations, workshops, and courses related to web accessibility. It is my pleasure to turn it over to John. He will be, as I mentioned, taking questions throughout the session in the chat area, as well as doing some web application sharing, which he will audio describe for us. And with that, John, I will turn it over to you. Just so you know, the audio is not on, John. Go ahead.
Okay. Hello, I'm John Gunderson from the University of Illinois. Thank you for inviting me to come to talk about some of the work that we're doing here at the University of Illinois. I'm going to be talking about some open source tools we've been developing for inspecting and auditing web resources for accessibility. If you'd like an HTML version of the slides that are being presented through Blackboard today, this second slide, or I guess slide 13, has a link to HTML versions of the slides that should be fully accessible. A little bit of overview of what I'll be talking about today. The first thing is the W3 standards that we're basing the tools on. I think we're entering a new era of accessibility in terms of having engineered accessibility solutions and hopefully putting behind the works with a certain version of some assistive technology way of creating accessible or of defining accessible content. I know for many years people defined accessibility as working with X version of a particular assistive technology because that was usually a technology that some of their employees or they knew consumers were using. With some of the new W3 standards, especially the new accessible rich internet application language specification, and with the HTML5 specification, we're starting to come to an age where developers hopefully will have to know less about assistive technologies and more about how to the accessibility features of the of HTML5 and other markup languages. The rules are all based, basically the evaluation engine is based on something called the Open AJAX Alliance Evaluation Library. I'll talk a little bit about that. In the next section will be some background information. What are some of the key concepts that are shared by the tools? And that's helpful to know, especially if you're familiar with other tools for evaluating web content. And then I'll demonstrate a browser plugin for Firefox called Ainspector Sidebar. And then I'll demonstrate our server-based tool, which is designed to spider a set of websites, basically using the same rule set and the same evaluation library. And then I'll talk a little bit about some of the next steps we have, plans for the tools, and acknowledgments of people who have helped develop the tools. Any questions before we get going here? Okay, I'm going to move on to slide 15 then. One of the main features of this next generation of tools is lining up the evaluation results with the success criteria in the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. We felt this was important because many international or many other countries other than the United States have adopted WCAG level A and double A or some slight variation of that as their national standards. And the Section 508 refresh is also going to be allowing WCAG success criteria level A and double A requirements to also satisfy the Section 508 requirements or some slight variation of that. So we felt it was important for the tools to be able to make it clear which rules actually go with which WCAG requirement. And so there's a lot of important accessibility features in WCAG, and we want to make sure that people who are using that as their standard could be able to view their current level of compliance related to that standard. And to make sure that we had at least one rule for all of the WCAG single A and double A requirements. Another thing that has just emerged in March of just this year, a couple months ago, the Accessible Rich Internet Application specification was published as a specification by the W3C. This specification has been in development for probably about 10 years, and it now has enough implementation within browsers to allow it to become an actual recommendation of the W3C. Yaria, how many people who are in the chat are familiar or have heard of ARIA before? Anybody? I don't know if people can raise their hands. Okay. A few people? Okay. 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 So basically, ARIA technology is designed to make dynamic web applications to provide the information assistive technologies need to make these applications accessible. There's two main parts to ARIA specification. One is called landmarks, which basically allows people to represent the visual layout or organization of a website in the markup so that people who are using assistive technologies can also benefit from that organization that people put into the graphical layout. And then widgets basically probably have been to some websites where content changes dynamically or there's non-standard form controls. Like combo boxes and other types of what are called widgets in the ARIA language. And so we wanted to support the ART Accessible Rich Internet Application specification. So we can check for the use of ARIA. We have a number of over 18 rules related to the use of landmarks and proper coding practices. So a big part of what we want to do is help developers understand not only what the syntax is, but how to use the syntax of these of new markup languages to actually implement highly accessible web resources. Another new player on the block is HTML5. HTML5 has a number of new accessibility features. We also want to check for those features into web pages. Some of the more common ones in HTML5 is actually specifying which ARIA widget roles and landmark roles can go on different types of HTML5 elements. Again, to provide a context for how developers should actually use this markup on their web page. Slide 18 here shows the HTML5 main element. This is a new element, just one example of the new accessibility features in HTML5 is that the main element should contain the main content of the web page. And those people familiar with the old Section 508 requirements know there's kind of a skip navigation or skip to main a design requirement. And now we have an actual element that we can look at to find if the developer includes it. So we want to start to encourage developers to start using these semantic elements in a useful way. So like there should be only one main element on most pages. And since the main element is a new element, not all browsers support exporting this information in an accessible way to assistive technologies. So until that happens, we want people also to use the main landmark on the main element if it's present. So that's just one example of some of the new features in HTML5. The next slide, slide 19 here, just talks about the Open AJAX Evaluation Library. The Open AJAX Library is written in JavaScript, so that's kind of the language that browsers understand, so that the evaluation library can run both in any browser like Firefox or Safari or Chrome, but it can also run on a server, and so that we can use it both to develop browser extensions and develop server-based tools that can spider entire websites, or in the future, spider entire organizations to help developers and managers and administrators understand the accessibility of the resources that they have some control over or would like to provide feedback on accessibility. So getting started, conceptual foundation. So the basis of one of the main things that we want to include is something we call the rule. So rules are basically a technique or design goal that we want people to achieve. So probably simpler rules are like images should have an alt attribute. Or if they're supporting ARIA, they could also have role presentation if they're considered decorative. Other types of rules are like every form control needs a label. That links also need an accessible name. Table markup needs to have proper header and header labels if it's a complex table, and they use th elements to indicate table header cells. So there's a lot of different rules, and each rule is tied back to a WCAG requirement. On the second concept is something called target resources. Rules are looking for specific pieces of certain types of elements on a page. And if it finds those elements, it'll apply the rule and evaluate whether that page has the accessibility feature that the rule is looking for. If it doesn't find those target resources, the rule basically becomes non-applicable. And I think this is one of the most important features of any automated evaluation tool. Many people here are probably familiar with WCAG and know that there's like 67 different success criteria. So that's a lot of stuff. So what essentially a good evaluation tool does is filter out, looks at the markup of the pages you're interested in and says, okay, these are the requirements that I need to look at. So for example here, we have over almost 120 rules. Most pages, only about 40 to 50 rules actually apply. So you can see that the evaluation library filters out a lot of requirements that I don't need to worry about. It helps me focus on the accessibility things I do need to worry about. The next concept is something called a rule result. So basically our rules, we have a number of different rule results. One is pass, so that if it finds the accessibility requirement, it passes. The developer doesn't have to worry about it, or that the accessibility requirement is met. We have something called a violation. So if the evaluation result doesn't see the accessibility feature, it can either produce a violation if it's a required rule, or a warning if it was a recommended rule. Most of the rules are required, but there are some recommended rules. A rule may be recommended because maybe it's not clear if all people agree that that's an accessibility feature needed to satisfy WCAG requirements, or maybe it's a new feature, people aren't familiar with it. It provides a second way to indicate to developers that, kind of a two-tiered system. Violations are things people should pay attention to first. Warnings would be the next step for them to pay attention to. We also have a new concept, at least in the tools we've been developing, something called a manual check. Many times, target resources may be on a page. So for example, multimedia, a lot of multimedia rules. But we aren't able to tell if there's captions or audio transcriptions just by looking at the markup. So for example, if a video has open captions, there would be nothing unique in the actual markup because the video encoded the open captions. So for a lot of those rules, there's manual checks. Do you have captions? Do you have a text transcript? Are there audio descriptions? So again, we only warn the developer or the user of the tool that these things are required when it actually sees markup that could be a media result. All right, we're going to move on to slide 21. Slide 21 shows some of the basic concepts for objects. So we have, I've already talked about some of these, rules, which have a definition, an evaluation function to look at the markup to see if the rule is being satisfied. We have result messages, and the result messages try to tell developers what needs to change, what do they need to add to their website or change to that particular element or page to meet the requirement of the rule. The technique. So one of the things I know when people use some tools is that they'll take the resulting message, stick it into Google, and see what comes back. That may or may not be a good way to find out information about a good technique. So we actually want to include techniques in the rule results so people have at least some hints or some information about the different ways they can use to satisfy the rule. And we also have a lot of other references to good resources to help people understand more about the definition of the rule, what the functional accessibility feature is, and techniques to solve it. Another important concept I already mentioned is target resources. Are we looking at images or inputs or elements or event handlers? And then a rule set. We currently support two different rule sets. One rule set is called WCAG plus ARIA. So it looks at, it assumes, that rule set assumes people understand the nuances of how to develop accessible widgets using ARIA technology. The other rule set is called WCAG plus landmarks. And this basically is assuming that a developer may be new to ARIA technology and limits their use of ARIA just to landmarks. If it sees widget rules in a website, it'll warn the user to the developer to remove them until they understand how to manage focus, set properties and states properly, and support the keyboard for a particular widget. I've seen too many websites where people have seemed to have randomly put in widget rules thinking that they're improving accessibility, and have often made websites much less accessible. And I can talk more about that later if people are interested. Slide 22 here just highlights some of the elements, the results. So violation are basically are when required rules fail, and warnings are when recommended rules fail. Manual check, basically the target resources were found on the page, but we weren't able to tell just by looking at the markup whether the accessibility requirement has been met. Pass basically means that all rule requirements for that particular rule are satisfied. And in most cases, many rules are not applicable because the target resources or pattern wasn't found on the page. We also have another concept called hidden. Especially in dynamic web pages, there's a lot of hidden, potentially a lot of hidden content. We don't currently analyze hidden content because it may or may not become visible, and sometimes people don't actually add the accessibility features to the hidden content until the user invokes making them visible. But we do warn the developer or user that there is hidden content that wasn't analyzed, and so that they can be aware that at some point this hidden content may become visible and they should consider the accessibility of it, or make it visible and then just rerun the evaluation to make sure that the information is accessible. So I might demonstrate Inspector a sidebar here. So I'm going to start application sharing. So okay. Does anybody have a website they'd like to analyze? And if somebody want to type a URL into the chat system? It makes it a little bit more fun when we actually do something somebody's interested in. No? Nobody has a URL that they want to put in?
John, it looks like there's one from Monica. It's www.uth.edu.
Oh, okay. I guess I was in the wrong tab. Sorry about that. Okay, I put in uth.edu, so this is University of Texas Health. Okay. UT Health website is now up. I installed eInspector sidebar, and when it's installed on the web page into the browser, this is the Firefox browser. In addition to putting it in the menu. It puts a little AI icon in the toolbar of the browser up by the address field. So if I press the AI button, a little window pops up on the left-hand side of the screen with the title A-Inspector Sidebar. So when I press the AI button, A-Inspector goes and uses the OpenAJAX library to evaluate the web page that you're currently on. At the top of the page, there's when you first open it, is the summary view. There's two buttons, one called Back and one called Views, so you can directly change which view you want to see. After the buttons on the page, there's something we call the summary grid. The summary grid is basically four boxes with different colors representing the number of rules of violations, the number of rules that resulted in warnings, the number of rules that resulted in manual checks, and the number of rules that resulted in pass. So on this particular page, there's 10 rules that were violated. There were two rules with warnings. There are 23 manual checks and 19 rules that passed. Underneath the summary grid, there's a little tab panel. One tab is called Rule Categories, and the other, RECAG Guidelines. Rule Categories was designed to look at the rules more from a developer's perspective. The categories include groups like landmarks, headings, styles and content, images, links, tables, forms, widgets and scripts, audio and video, keyboard support, timing, and site navigation. We felt these labels for grouping of rules would be more accessible and approachable by a developer than looking at the rules through a WCAG view. We also, the other tab provides looking at the rule results through the WCAG guidelines view. So basically here we have the WCAG guidelines, so 1.1 text alternative, there's three pass, rules that pass. 1.2 time-based media, there are no results for that. 1.3 adaptable, so there's two violations, one warning, one manual check, and seven rules that passed for adaptable. And so on and so forth, distinguishable, keyboard accessible, enough time, features, navigable, readable, predictable, input assistance, and 4.1 compatible. So for people who might be looking, who are more familiar with WCAG guidelines, this provides them with a different view of the rules that they'll be more comfortable with. So let's go back and go to the other tab, Rule Categories. So one of the things I can do is say, okay, there's under the first category, landmarks, and kind of a suggested way we, the ordering of the rule categories is one way or a suggested way that developers may go through the different rules in order to understand them or to implement them. So there's some implied importance to each of the rule categories. Although it's just an implied, it's we want people to fully comply with all of the rules to meet the requirements of WCAG level A and double A compliance. But many developers always want to know, where do I start? So the first place we want people to start is with landmarks. It's a new technology. It's a technology that's been around for a long time, but I don't think it's very well understood or people don't understand it. There's a lot of assistive technology support, a lot of browser support for it. And it's one of the first things that at least I and other people look at when we're looking at creating a more accessible website. So if we look under the landmarks, I double click on the landmarks link or in the table. And now I see a list of the rules related to this the landmark category. So the first rule that has a violation, page structure must be defined by landmarks. So my guess is that this particular page, again, double click on it, and we see that basically, well, there are some landmarks on this page. So, so what kind of landmark is there? is a navigation landmark? There's at least one navigation landmark. So I can use the back button to go back up to the rule. So what this is basically saying is that all rendered content must be in some type of landmark. So typically the four landmarks that are typically on a page would be the banner landmark, so indicating the top content typically. But a navigation landmark, so site-wide navigation links. Oftentimes there's more than one. On this page you can see that there's probably more than one set of site navigation links. Main content. Home pages are always a little bit more complicated than secondary pages for identifying the main content, because typically, and I think this page represents that, home pages for different programs typically are just mostly navigation, getting people to areas that they're interested in learning about. And so with this, people can see, okay, I need to add more landmark structure. If I go back into page, structure must be defined by landmarks. There's at the top, there's information about the rule results. There's a little text box, so it says here, actions. Update the landmark structure of the page by placing the 61 elements not contained in landmarks into one or more container elements with proper landmark roles. So probably the main landmark and other features. There's a hidden result. 66 hidden elements with renderable content were found. If any could become visible, make sure they are in container elements with proper landmark roles. So this is probably some of that rotating image, rotating images, or you might have some flyout menus. I'm not sure what the hidden content is. Underneath the message information, the rule result message, there's two tabs. One is element results, and I just clicked on the other tab, rule information. And this provides more details about the rule. And basically back to some of those basic concepts, a definition. So all rendered content must be placed inside of a container elements with the proper ARIA landmark roles. Compliance. So this is a WCAG Level A requirement. So if you're trying to comply with WCAG Level A, this would be a required rule. A purpose. So it's an information about why this is important to people with disabilities. Many developers especially say, well, why is this important? You know, I don't really understand this landmark stuff. Well, we have a purpose here. Landmarks provide a way to organize the various types of content on a page for users of assistive technologies. The organization is functionally similar to the way visual designers organize information for people using a graphical rendering of the content. And the target elements are basically all renderable elements. There's techniques here. Use appropriate landmarks to identify the different sections of a web page. The most important landmarks are the main and navigation landmarks, as they are likely to be the most frequently used. And then we have information about the WCAG success criteria. 131, info and relationships, is the primary success criteria. But it can also be related to 241, bypass blocks, 246, headings and labels, and 2410, section headings. And then more information that people want to find out about what are landmark roles, what are their definitions. There's a link to the ARIA specification. Can you use AInspector within Internet Explorer? No, you can only use it, it's only right now, works in Firefox. It's a Firefox add-in. So we don't support Internet Explorer. And Internet Explorer does not make it easy for people to create extensions like this. We don't currently have any plans to try to implement this in Internet Explorer. But if people are interested, they could use the evaluation library and develop their own extension for Internet Explorer. And I'd be happy to help them do that or learn about how to use the evaluation library. Question, what is the difference between AInspector and W3C? Well, the W3C is a standards organization that develops web standards. So we're not a standards organization. We're developing tools to help people understand the accessibility of their resources. So AInspector is basically some software that implements rules that helps people understand and try to meet the requirements of the WCAG requirements. So the tools don't have any real relationship to the W3C other than that we use the specifications of the W3C, including WCAG, ARIA, HTML5, to develop the rules that were to create accessible content. Any other questions here? AInspector versus WAVE. I don't use WAVE a lot, so I guess I'm not prepared to compare them. Does AInspector only work with HTML websites? What about WordPress? My understanding is that WordPress is HTML, so you could use it on WordPress websites. So I assume that you probably could invite the WebAIM people to come in and talk about WAVE. I'd say one difference between WAVE and AInspector is that we try to make very explicit what the design rules are for accessibility and to look at all of the WCAG requirements and help people see how different rules relate to WCAG requirements and to provide a much more detailed information about how to satisfy the requirements of a rule. So, there's lots of tools out there for testing accessibility. One of my other concerns about other tools is that they that might be a difference, and I believe WAVE works on the DOM too, but some tools, especially server-based tools, don't look at actual rendered content. They only look at the HTML content that comes down the wire, so just the source code HTML. And I did a workshop on the tool last week. And one of the people asked, well, tell me what line number there's a problem. Well, in dynamic accessibility, the concept of line numbers really isn't that meaningful. Back in the days when people hand-coded HTML, and basically the whole HTML file content was represented in a single document, that was extremely useful information. But with the new dynamic web technologies and the use of web application frameworks, where a particular piece of content comes from is not a single file anymore. And oftentimes it's dynamically created when the web page queries some database and gets a bunch of database information and fills up the page with the database results that weren't part of the original download of the page. So, and that's, I think, an important aspect of, I think, what the tools I'm demonstrating do. They actually look at what's actually being rendered on the page, something called the document object model. We're not looking at the source code of the stuff coming down. So if you're working with people, you may want to ask those types of questions. How do they analyze dynamically generated content? Okay. All right. Any questions about AInspector Sidebar at this point? Well, we've had a few questions I've answered. People want me to compare it to other tools. I'm not sure what you mean by how accurate are these tools. What accuracy in terms of what? Okay. I guess we'll just wait for them to clarify the question, I guess. I'm not sure what accurate means. Some of the other preferences here, so if I hit the preferences button in the lower left-hand corner, you can see some of the options. And again, one of the options is you can choose which rule set. So if you're not familiar with ARIA technologies or just learning about them and you're a developer, you might want to start out with the WCAG plus landmarks only. This will kind of keep you away from the widget roles until you feel comfortable with ARIA. And then if you do, you can switch back to the WCAG plus ARIA rule set. The tools are as accurate as your coding abilities. Well, we do have a whole set of tests. So each rule goes through a number of tests. So we test different types of markup that we're trying to detect. So we do have a quality assurance process for the rules. Obviously, we may not get every unique. There's a lot of different coding practices out there for the web. The web is a big place. So if people find websites that they think are accessible, but the rules don't pass, I'd like to know about it. Or if they think there's something inaccessible that the tool passes, that it'll also provide feedback on that. So that we want to be able to make sure, especially with references to the actual website being tested. We use these tools here at Illinois, so I'm confident enough in the tools to be able to use them here. A number of other big companies use them too. So like any tool, the web is a complicated place. We may miss something, or something may be coded in a way that we didn't anticipate. And so them being open source, you can provide feedback to us as developers, or if you are a developer yourself, you can go in and fix the tools. Or I think what many people probably are taken aback at with this tool is its comprehensiveness. It really looks at all of the WCAG level A and double A requirements, including the ARIA and HTML5. So we also take a different approach than many other rules by looking at focusing on the rule itself rather than element level results. Many of the rules that we have, like do you have a main landmark on the page, aren't really element level. They're page or website related. So we have a number of rules related to how is the website supporting this particular WCAG feature. How is the page supporting this WCAG feature? So people are often familiar with other tools. And I know that one of the things people talk about is I fixed 565 errors. Well, a lot of those are element level errors. And we took a much different approach in OpenAJAX library in reporting rule results. And we felt that was important because if a developer understands the rule, then they can start putting that in their coding practices. If they're just waiting for people to tell them what they did wrong, then they're always going back and nickel and diming a whole bunch of elements on the page potentially. But we're also concerned that things like, is there a main landmark on the page, might get overshadowed by another rule like, oh, there's no alt text or images. Well, there's 30 of those on the page, so that must be more important than this one, is there a main landmark on the page? So we want to make sure that all rules carry equal weight in front of the user. Then they can dig down and find out whether it's a website-related rule, a page-related rule, or an element-related rule. So those are some new concepts that you might not see in other tools that tend to report more element-level results. And those numbers can often be overwhelming. I know at least even on our own campus here, they hire people just to go through the reports to kind of filter out results into something that's useful to developers. So we're trying to make tools that can be more directly used by developers during the development time, and so that we can have accessibility more easily designed into products than waiting for them to be produced and somebody reporting the accessibility problems. So that's another difference maybe between these tools and how they report information. Basically, which rules apply, and then as you dig down in the rule, you find out, well, how many elements or what do I need to do? Sometimes it's the more traditional, I got to put alt on this form control, I have to put a label on this this form control. But some other rules are like, oh, I don't have a main landmark on this page. Okay, well, where does the main landmark go? What is a main landmark? Okay, and so there's only going to typically be one main landmark on a page, and a tool can't guess where that should be. So that's a little bit different. Basically, all rules map back to WCAG guidelines. So you can see if a rule, one of, I think, the important aspects of a tool like this is that hopefully it will spur a discussion on what does it mean to be accessible. Right now, accessibility, while there are generally accepted practices for many types of elements, other features aren't as well defined and are up to individual accessibility people to look at. And with a lot of projects, people are kind of always doing triage. What's the most important accessibility things that we want to put into this thing because we only have so much time? I've often heard to accessibility people being like fire trucks or firemen going around putting out accessibility fires. So I only spend enough time at one accessibility fire to at least get the fire out, and so there still might be a lot of leftover accessibility problems, but I got to run to the next fire because it's over here. So again, we're trying to provide information on accessibility to developers to help them understand what they need to do to comply to WCAG Level A and AA conformance. And by making the rules much more salient, again, we're providing the design information. Many other tools, you just kind of get the rule results. You're not sure exactly what the rule was other than that you violated X, Y, Z. So, I don't know. Hopefully that helps understand maybe the difference between the approach we took with these tools and maybe some of the other tools. And I urge people to give them a try. And your feedback, good or bad, I would like to know about them. Okay, well, let's move on to FAE 2.0. I just went to FAE 2.0, ceda.illinois.edu. I'll put the link into the chat. And this is hopefully I'm still connected. All right. I'm going to log in here to my account. This is a public website, so if you're interested in trying out FAE 2.0, you can sign up for an account. There's a link here on the homepage. Register for free account. I'm going to log into my account. And we can now run that UT website. Let me just go back and get that. University of Texas Health, I think. Okay. So I type in the URL into the first form control here, URL. Gave it a title, University of Texas Health. Depth of evaluation. So I can just look at the top level page, or I can also look at all the links to the top level page, and I can also look at third level pages. So the links of the links from the secondary pages will also be spidered. I can just stay, the next set of options is I can stay in just the specified domain, or I could go to next level subdomain. So if there was like calendar.uth.edu, it could follow those. I'll just stay in this specified domain. and I'll use the WCAG plus ARIA rule set. And then I'll press evaluate, and it'll start evaluating that website. Okay. In the meantime, I can look at an archive report. So these are some reports I ran earlier. So the first report here is what I did earlier today of the University of Iowa. It analyzed 344 pages. It went to a depth of 3. So if we take a look at this, if I select the University of Iowa link under Archive Reports, the first view I'll see is something called a summary report. So this gives you a high-level view of the accessibility to the page by rule in the default view is by rule category. So so there's a lot of information on this page. The left-hand side of the page has navigation, so you can move between the different types of reports or run a new report or view archive reports. On the right-hand side, the main content of the page, at the top it says summary report. After that is a little block that gives information about the current evaluation. So this is the University of Iowa. Pages 344 were analyzed. The depth that was requested was a depth of 3, so third level, secondary level links. And the rule set was WCAG plus ARIA. There's a link in that block called included URLs. If I select that link, I can actually go and look at all of the exact URLs that were analyzed for that particular analysis. It'll also, at the bottom, show me links that were broken. So these links were broken. They returned something called 404 errors, so they weren't analyzed. There's also some evaluation failed. So like somebody said earlier, well, how reliable or accurate? I guess if for some reason the evaluation engine fails, and that's typically because the JavaScript on the page poorly formed and throws too many exceptions. So our server-based tool says, I can't handle all of these JavaScript extensions and fails. You can only see the URLs that failed, and you could go and evaluate them manually if you wanted to. And we also have a section called filtered URLs. So these are URLs that were detected but weren't analyzed because they weren't part of www.uth.edu. or in this case, University of Iowa, uiowa.edu. So you get extensive information about what was analyzed and what was not analyzed as a part of the report. Many people may not care about this, but I think it's important information so that users who are actually trying to do auditing and things can find out, okay, what exactly was analyzed here. And if there are problems, maybe you have to go back and fix pages to make sure that they can be analyzed. So this is a fairly large report. So I can go back to the summary report. So after the information about what website and the URL information, the link to the URL information, I get another summary grid similar to A Inspector Sidebar. And again, this tells you out of the 344 pages, there's at least one page that violates 33 different rules. There might be more pages that violate that rule, but there's at least one page that violates one of 33 rules. There's 8 rules, at least 8 rules with at least one violation that resulted in warnings, 33 rules that resulted in manual checks, and 11 rules that passed all 344 pages that were analyzed. And again, we have the rule categories here, so you can find out how many rules in each category were violations, warnings, manual checks, or passed. There's also another section we call implementation status. So this tells you, for example, I just said, well, maybe only one page violates that particular rule, and all other 343 pages pass that rule. Well, the implementation status score kind of gives you an idea. It's a score that goes between 0 and 100. It's not really a percentage, but it's kind of a percentage. The closer you are to 100, basically the more you've implemented the rules for that particular category. And then there's a message like partial, incomplete, almost complete. It's also an indication of which rules developers may need to learn more about. Okay, for example here, Landmarks only had a partial implementation. Maybe the developers working on these URLs have to learn about Landmarks. So the next time they run the report or as they add Landmark features, they can go back and test to make sure they got Landmarks correct, and that score should increase. And there's a basically some information about implementation status information definitions at the bottom. We can also, by selecting the view options in the left-hand navigation bar, is we can now look at the summary results based on WCAG guidelines. So now we see in the table in the middle, there's a column called WCAG guidelines. So we have 1.1 text alternatives, 1.2 time-based media, all the way down to guideline 4.1 compatible. And now I see the rules organized by WCAG. So if I'm doing a compliance check, I can see which WCAG guidelines and success criteria I'm passing or failing. So again, this might be something more comfortable for people who want to see things organized by WCAG. Now we also have a third view option called Rule Scope. And I talked about this a little bit earlier. Each rule, in addition to many of the other properties, like what WCAG success criteria is related to, also have a scope. What is this rule looking at? I think many people are used to rules looking at individual elements. Does this image have an alt text? Does this form control have a label? Or there's a heading on a page or whatever. But in WCAG, there's rules that have a scope of page. Does this page have a main landmark? Does this page have navigation, more than one way for me to navigate the content of a website? Does the website have consistent navigation features or consistent ordering of sections on a page? So this would be like landmarks or the use of headings. And are they consistently labeled? And so you can see that many of the website and page rules result in manual checks because we don't have automated rules to test for them. But providing developers with information about what they should be looking for, like the properties of headings and landmarks, they now understand what those WCAG requirements mean in terms of the design of the page and can include them. Okay. So if we go down to the landmarks category, the next view we see here is a summary of the landmarks rules. So now it's showing me all of the landmark rules that were analyzed across the 344 pages. I can now see how many pages violated a particular rule, had warnings, manual checks, or passed that rule. So now I'm getting more, okay, how many pages am I dealing with? Kind of get more detailed information about a particular rule. And again, and on the far right-hand side, I can get the success criteria, the primary success criteria associated with that rule, the level of the rule, whether it's single A or double A, and whether in this particular rule set it's a required or recommended rule. There's also a column called hidden content, which indicates how many pages have hidden content. And hidden content should always be kind of a warning sign saying that, okay, there's some stuff on this page that's dynamic, which might be indicating that you'll need to carefully look at the accessibility of that page. Okay. So this kind of, and then if I look at a one of the rules, so page structure must be defined by landmarks, it'll now take me down to another view, where it'll show me the page level results for that rule. So I'll find out how many elements on that page violated or passed that particular rule. Whether that rule resulted in a violation. So you can see for rule one here, all 344 pages violated this particular rule. If I pick a page, so this first page, I now get a view of just that page results. I get the rule result messages, and I also get that same rule information that we had in AInspector sidebar. So that's kind of the rule view. I can also have a page level report, so I can look at the pages and how many rules passed or failed on each page. So again, I can now have a page view, and then I pick a page, so I'll pick Molly, that sounds like, oh no, Hawaii, I'll pick that one. It'll show me the more detailed rule results, and I basically now get a view similar to AInspector Sidebar. AInspector Sidebar basically analyzes a single page, and this view gives you that same kind of view. And I also get a view of all the rules, so I can find out, okay, which rules were violated on this particular page? Which rules have manual checks? Which rules have warnings? Again, very rule-centric, helping developers trying to understand the concepts of accessible design rather than just trying to fix things to get rid of accessibility problems. And again, people can create an account and try it out on their own websites. I'd love your feedback. I think one of the main reasons I developed these tools is to get feedback. So what does it really mean to be accessible? You know, people talk about accessibility all the time and that web pages should be accessible. But what rules, whether they're, you know, explicit or just kind of in people's heads, are they actually using to mean for accessibility? So I'm curious on what people think of the rules, which ones they like, which ones they don't like, which ones they don't understand, because it helps us develop resources. The primary use of this tool, again, is for, we feel, is for people who are developers who are trying to understand accessibility, or for accessibility auditors who are trying to understand how a particular web resource or set of web pages relates to WCAG requirements. All right, so I'm going to leave the application sharing now and go back to the slides. Any questions about, let's see, I probably missed some questions. Will FAE work in Internet Explorer? FAE is a server-based tool, so it's a website, so it should work with any HTML standards browser, so Internet Explorer should be fine. Do the rules that have manual checks always come back with a manual check, or do they sometimes resolve automatically? Most rules that result in a manual check will always be a manual check. So you would have to do, and there's information about what people should be actually trying to look for, and we want to improve on that. Because there isn't necessarily any markup. There may be other techniques that would result in a manual check, or that would result into a passing. So for example, if instead of using, you know, a flash-based media player, if you used the video tag and had a caption had a caption track, then you could pass the caption rule. But a lot of media players don't use that at this point. And that doesn't always necessarily mean you'll get captions, because a lot of mobile media is very, you know, it's still kind of the Wild West. There's still a lot of media stuff going on, and different media choices will have affect people from an accessibility and a markup standpoint in many different ways. So I really don't want to generalize, but select start sharing or switch mode. Start sharing. So we demonstrated AInspector. I'm on slide 23 now. One of the other things we're doing is developing coding practices. So each rule needs to have accessible examples or common inaccessible examples. So this is something that we put on hold until we haven't been able to work on as much as we'd like. We hope to start working on this again. But basically, creating examples for each rule so that people can see an accessible this or an accessible that. And that'll be important, especially when people start using ARIA widgets. Because ARIA widgets, you first have to figure out what are you trying to describe, what is the keyboard interaction that's the most efficient for this feature, and then you start looking at, well, what roles do I need to apply to that? So you can apply widget roles kind of randomly in a page, and it'll probably be making things less accessible or confusing to people with disabilities because there won't be the other features, or it's not really the interaction pattern that widget is representing. So coding practices. Slide 25 here shows information about related to ARIA resources. So if you're looking for to learn more about ARIA or some toolkits that implement some ARIA, I don't guarantee these toolkits implement ARIA completely correctly. That's one of the things that we need, is we need more people to understand ARIA and can provide feedback to these widget libraries, because while somebody who are very knowledgeable may create an accessible widget and check it in, later on, if somebody else comes in to modify it, they may change the accessibility. So it may not be as accessible as it was before. So we need more vigilance, especially for these libraries that people might be using. Next steps for the tools. We're still a few rules away from having one rule for each WCAG 2.0 level A and double A success criteria. Hopefully in the next month or two we'll have at least one complete rule set. We're testing the validity of rules. We have test cases that we're developing for each rule so that we have some confidence that the rule is testing what we think it's testing and that it conforms to the requirements of the W3C specifications. We're always working on improving on the rule messaging and references. So we've got 120 rules, so there's a lot of messages. We want the messages to be as useful as possible to developers and as consistent as possible. It sounds like a minor thing, but when you're introducing accessibility concepts, you want to try to make sure you're using language that developers can understand so that they can do the right thing. We want to have them spending more time on doing accessibility than trying to understand the accessibility requirements. We're doing user testing to see things that we can improve. So if you try out the tools and have ideas on how to make the tools better, or if something seems confusing to you, that's helpful to us because we can use that information in improving future versions. I've also talked about coding practices a little bit on the previous slide. We're also working on a tool called FAE Auditor, which will allow us to analyze the websites of the entire campus and organize them in a way that we can identify them with different units on campus. This will help us be able to provide data to administrators and to IT, especially IT administrators, on the current and to like the and other administrators on their current state of implementation of accessibility and who seems to be getting it and who doesn't, so resources and administrative controls can be put in place to keep accessibility, to improve accessibility on campus and to make sure that people continue their compliance. Many times people, you know, have a big accessibility rally or a fire hose and they get something accessible and then the accessibility stuff goes away. People start changing, modifying the website, and they don't understand the accessibility components, and eventually maybe the accessibility starts to degrade. So let's see. Slide 27. I'm not sure what kind of error message. If you could paste the error message into the chat, or you can contact me later and send me an email. I can maybe help you try to figure out what's going on, Michelle. Okay. Does the University of Illinois have classes on accessible testing? We do have training resources available. I'm actually doing some tutorials next month here for developers and testing people on campus to look at how the accessibility features of ARIA. And we do plan on doing more training as the tools develop and we get more experience. So if you're Well, that's a weird one. But okay, well, we'll have to see. Okay. All right, we'll have to probably follow up on that one, on the error message. For AInspector, we want to create HTML reports of evaluation results. A delayed timing, so like if there's hidden content, many times you have to go interact on the page for the hidden content. So we basically want to be able to press a button and say in 3 seconds we're going to analyze whatever visible content on the page. Another big thing is that manual checking really requires specialized use. So if I want to know is the heading structure or is the landmark structure on this page meaningful, I need a view of the landmarks and the content on the page that will help me determine that. Because you can't see, just looking at a page, you can't tell where the landmarks are. So we want to provide specialized views that help people realize the manual checks. And we probably, one of the things that AInspector does is highlight the elements on the page that have the accessibility problem. And we'd like to add more information as kind of tooltips. So when people go over and look at a particular result, they're pointing with their mouse so they can get more information. FAE 2.0 features shibboleth authentication support. So this would help, especially on our campus, to make it easier for web developers to create a password and a login because they wouldn't have to create a new one. They could use the same one they use for all the other campus resources. One of the other features we've talked about is something we call rule rating and commenting within FAE 2.0. So again, I talked about, well, what does it mean to be accessible? We want to know what people think about the rules. Does this rule make sense? Do people think it's something that's required for WCAG compliance? Or if not, why not? Or what rules should be there that aren't there? Another important feature is analyzing password-protected websites. That's a really important feature, especially for me, especially as the university works with a lot of vended products that have password protection. Well, I'd like to be able to get by that password and go and spider the pages behind it and get an accessibility report and find out about the accessibility features of these vended products or even campus-developed products. And report annotation. So if I do have one of these accessibility reports, that I can write notes to the developer or whoever is going to be looking at the report to say, this page is more important, this rule is more important. So you can annotate the report with information that would help people know where to start or what pages are most important. Just like to acknowledge some of our sponsors, the University of Illinois. We also like to acknowledge the Committee on Institutional Cooperation. They're helping support the development of the tools. The CIEC is basically, the people are familiar with the Big Ten Athletic Conference. This is a parallel, separate organization from the Big Ten Athletic Conference, but is fosters collaboration among those universities, plus the University of Chicago, on academic research and library and other information, and about 2 years ago they formed an IT accessibility group so that universities like Wisconsin, Michigan, Rutgers, Maryland, Ohio State, Purdue, Indiana, Nebraska, Iowa, we could all work together to try to improve the accessibility of resources that we share. And there's helping support these tools, and many of those institutions are planning or already using these tools as a part of their accessibility implementation program. The IBM Corporation also supported the development of the OAA Evaluation Library and the AInspector for Firebug, a tool that I didn't demonstrate today, but because it's still under development. I'd also like to acknowledge the developers, Nicholas Hoyt and Garrett Smith from Wisconsin and Nicholas Hoyt from Illinois, who have worked hard on the development of the tools. Other people contributing is Priscilla Bali. She's working on AIM Spectre Firebug. Pramod Joshi and Jeff Heckel from AITS Development Group that have helped develop the underlying engine for the FAE and FAE Auditor tools. So slide 31. You can help. This is open source. So if you're interested in helping us, we'd love to have more people help us. Let's see. And questions and comments then. So slide 32 is basically my contact information. So if you have questions or problems, please contact me and I'll try to get back to you as soon as I can. Any other questions?
Any final questions, please type in the chat area. It looks like most of the questions were answered in the session. Okay, as we wrap up, I want to thank John for his excellent presentation. Thank you, John. I learned a lot. That session was recorded, and you will be able to get that on our archive of the Accessible Technology webinar space. And as John mentioned, his contact information is available. You can also contact the Great Lakes ADA Center, and we can try to answer your question or get you in touch with John as well. So I'll give it a second for any final questions. All right, that concludes the session. Thank you, John. Thank you, participants, for your time and attention.